Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Ketubos Daf Kuf Yud. We're getting very close to the end of this beautiful Masechta, and we're continuing in our series of Mishnayos here that detail the seven statements that Admon made that the Chachamim disagreed with. And we're up to Shita number 6 of Admon, and we begin the Mishnah at the very top of Kuf Yud Omer Aleph. The Mishnah tells us, Hamotzei Shtar Chov Al Chaveiro. If Rashi tells us in the top Rashi that Ruvain had lent Shimon money, and he has an earlier shtar chov on Shimon. But then he subsequently sold Shimon a field, and Shimon paid him money for the field. So we have over here Ruvain claiming that Shimon owes him money. He has an earlier shtar chov, and at the same time, he subsequently sold something to Shimon for money, so Shimon gave him money. And the question will be, if Shimon owed him money, why did he sell Shimon a field? If Shimon had money, he should have just taken the money that Shimon had owed him rather than selling him a field. So that's what the Mishnah is going to be talking about. And let's again start from the beginning. Hamotzi shtachov o'chaveiro. Ruvain has a shtachov that Shimon owes him money. V'ala, but Shimon, hotzi shemocha lo esasodeh. Shimon says, wait a second. I purchased the field from you. I gave you money at a later date. So if your shtachov was real, so then why would you have allowed me to go and pay you money for a field that you're selling? You should have just collected the money from me if what you're having as a shtar chov is correct. So again, in this situation, Admon Omer, Admon says, there's no way in the world that I would have purchased a field from you and paid you money if in fact you owed me money. Admon Omer, Yochel Hu Shi Omar, Shimon, the one who was claiming by Ruvain to have been lent money, Yochel Hu Shi Omar, Ilo Yisi Chayv L'Chov, if in fact I owed you money, why in the world would you have allowed me to buy a field from you? Instead of selling me the field and getting my money that way, you should have said, hey, you owe me money, so just give me the money. Why are you selling me a field? So therefore, Admon says that the original IOU that he has is cast doubt upon it, and it therefore isn't a good IOU. But the Chacham disagree with Admon. But Chacham Omer, no. Zeh Yapi Keach Shemoach Lo Tzekarki. No. Ruvain, in fact, was very, very smart that he sold the field to Shimon, and Shimon paid him for it, because now Shimon has karka, and karka is always something you can collect the debt from. Metaltlin, Shimon can say, listen, I'm sorry, I don't have any money, I can't pay you back. But now that he has karka, so Ruvain can access that karka and get his debt repaid. He can use that karka to be the vehicle via which he'll get his money back. So this way, Ruvain was very smart, according to Chachamim, and that, as Admon has suggested, that if there really was an IOU, why in the world would he have taken money and sold the field to Shimon? He should have just taken the money. Where it says, my time in the Rabbanon, Shapikom Admon. After all, Admon is correct. It doesn't make any sense. Before we explained already what the Chachamim's thoughts were, but on the surface, Admon is correct that if Shimon really owed Ruvain money, why would Ruvain sell him a field and get the money from the field sale? He should have just gotten the money as repayment of the loan. So what's the Chachamim's thought process? So the Gemara says, Biasro Yave Zuze, in a place where the minog was that they first would give the money and then only afterwards Vahadar Kazve Shtara, and then they would write the shtar for the sale, but the first money was transferred to Riffles, the place where Shimon would have to give the money first to Ruvain, and only then would Ruvain write him the shtar and give him the field. So then Admon is 100% right. Kuli Amba, even the Chacham would agree with Admon, Lo Pligi, the Matsu Amale, in that situation where Shimon has to give the money first, so then there's no way that that IOU would be real. The Chachamim would agree with Admon. There's no way that that IOU would be real because he's getting the money from Shimon. Why would he then give him the field if in fact it was an outstanding IOU? So obviously in that case, the Chacham would agree with Admon. Where there's the machlokis in our Mishnah Ki Pligi, in a place where the minhag was, Biasra, the place was the kostvi shtara, they would first write the shtar, so Shimon would get a shtar saying that he purchased the land before he gave over the money. And only afterwards, Vahadar Yavi Zuze, and only afterwards would he give over the money. And in this situation, Admon saw about his, we have the machlokis in our Mishnah, Admon's thinking is, Iboile Lemimsar Modah, if Ruvain really was doing what the Chacham said. He wanted to make sure that Shimon had property so he'd be able to collect the loan eventually from the property. He couldn't be able to hide the property, whereas Metatel he might be able to hide. So he should have told somebody about this. He should have said a modah. He should have told this to two witnesses beforehand. He says, listen, he owes me money. He doesn't want to pay me the money. So I'm selling him my field. This way I'll have karka. But the only reason I'm selling the field and not collecting the money is because I have to give the shtar first. If I ask for the money, he's going to say, no, I don't have it. So therefore, I'm doing it in this way. So according to Admon, if this really what was going on, he should have given a modah. And therefore, Admon says, since he didn't give such a modah, it must be that the real first IOU is not real. However, the Rabbanan Savri, no, what we had said in yesterday's year, chavrucha, chavru islay, v'chavro, v'chavroch, chavru islay. Because once you tell people a modah, they're going to tell somebody else, oh, you know what Reuven's doing? He's very smart. He's trying to get back his money that he's owed, and he's doing it through this sale. And they're going to tell somebody else. They're going to tell somebody else. Before you know it, it's going to get back to Shimon. And Shimon's going to say, listen, no deal. I'm not purchasing the field from you. I'm not giving you any money. And then having a karka that you can go and collect from. So therefore, this is the basis of the machlokas between Admon and the Chacham. Now we go to the next Mishnah, which is the last of the seven statements that Admon made that the Chachamim disagreed with. So the Mishnah tells us, and this is a complicated Mishnah and Gemara, and we're going to do it on a relatively superficial fashion. Shnayim shotziu shtar chov ze al ze. You have again Reuven and Shimon. Reuven has an IOU from Shimon. Reuven had lent Shimon money, and then Shimon has a IOU that he lent Reuven money. Now Reuven's IOU is first. So Reuven's is Chav Dalet Tishrei. And Shimon's IOU is at a later point in time after that. So Reuven has the earlier IOU note. So Reuven has a note that says that Shimon owes him money. And Shimon has a later note that says that Reuven owes him money. So in this situation, what do you do? Each of them produces their note. Now, if they have the same amount of money, let's say Reuven has the IOU that Shimon owes him $100, and Shimon has an IOU that Reuven owes him $100. So Admon Omer, Admon says in this situation that Shimon can say to Reuven, your note is a false note. Because if, in fact, I had owed you money, Elo Yisi Chayv Lucha, if I, in fact, owed you $100, Kesar Atal Ovi Mimeni, why would you have borrowed $100 from me? You should have just brought out your IOU and collected the $100 from me. Why did you borrow money from me? It must be that your IOU is not a good IOU. This is very similar to the previous Mishnah, and Admon is consistent. And he says, if this argument is, in fact, a valid argument, so then Reuven's earlier IOU should be bottled. It shouldn't be, in fact, collectible because Shimon has a very good taina. But again, the Chacham disagree. The Chacham omrim, no. Each of them collects his IOU. Why do you necessarily go and possible Reuven's IOU just because he borrowed money later on from Shimon? Each of them has an IOU. Each of them collect their IOU. Now let's begin the Gemara. Gemara starts off with the following statement. Itmar, we learned in the base medrash, Shnayim shotziu shtar chov zelzeh. You have, similar to our Mishnah, two people, each one bringing out an IOU against the other. So you have Reuven bringing out an IOU against Shimon, and Shimon has an IOU against Reuven. And we're assuming that they're the exact same amount. So Rav Nachman Amar zegove v'zegove. Rav Nachman says each of them collects their IOU, similar to what we had, the Chachamim's opinion in the Mishnah. However, Rav Sheshes disagrees. Rav Sheshes Amar, Hafuche matarto lomoli. This is an expression. Rashi says that Hafuche matarto lomoli means Hanose shnei martzufim shel or. The person has two sacks, leather sacks that he's carrying, umas and shove, and they weigh the exact same amount. So my yisro lo, how does it help him at all? Mahafok show yamin, the small, show small yamin. The person's carrying two things, so one side gets heavier than the other side, so he switches it around. So he's carrying, let's say, a 10-pound bag on his right arm and a 5-pound bag on his left arm, so after a while, his right arm gets tired, so he switches around, puts the 10-pound bag on his left arm. But they both weigh 10 pounds. If they weigh the same amount, so what good is it doing to switch from the right arm to the left arm, left arm to the right arm? How does this help you? Hafuche matarta, switching around these equal weights, normally it doesn't have any purpose. And therefore, Rav Shesha says, neither one can collect on the IU. You have two corresponding IUs. Reuven says Shimon owes $100, and Shimon has one that says that Reuven owes him $100. So you just leave things the way they are, and nobody collects on these IUs. And if they don't have cash, we don't say, well, Reuven goes into Shimon's property and takes a property, and then Shimon goes into Reuven's property and takes a property. Okay, so this is a basic machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes that seems to parallel our Mishnah. And where it says further, Dikulayama, everybody agrees that it doesn't make any sense to hafoch matarta, to just switch around the packages, if they weigh the same, so everybody agrees that if Reuven and Shimon have no money, and they each have properties, and the Kuli Alma Idis V'Idis, they only both have the highest level property. There are three grades of property, grade A, grade B, and grade C. So Idis is the highest grade, the best property. You have the Beninis, it's the middle level property, and the Ziburis is the worst level property. So everybody agrees, both Rav Nachman and Rav Sheishes, Rav Nachman agrees to Rav Sheishes, that if they both own Idis, so they have no cash, Reuven has no cash, Shimon has no cash, they each have a property, each of them has an Idis property, a high grade A property. So, or if they both have Beninis or Beninis, they both have a grade B property, the middle level property, or Ziburis, Ziburis, and they both have a grade C level property, the weakest properties, the most not good properties. So then, in that situation, everybody would agree. Rav Sheishes' idea of Hafuche Matar to Lomli would be agreed to by Rav Yehuda, and everybody would say, Vada Yafuchi Batartuhu. Why would you switch this grade A property for that grade A property, this grade B property for that grade B property, this grade C property for that grade C property? It doesn't make any sense. So where do we have the machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheishes? Ki plige, where do we disagree? The is le lechad beinanis u lechad ziburius. That one of them has both a beinanis and a ziburius. He has a middle level property and the least good property. And Rav Nachman saw in this situation that zeh govev is zeh govev. As Rav Nachman had said, each of them collects. Now why is that? So Rav Nachman's svara is as follows. When you decide if something is idius, beninus, or ziburius, it goes by what that person has. So one person's beninus may be another person's ziburius, or maybe another person's idius. So Rav Nachman's opinion is, ksavar bishalo hein shamin. You look at what that person has, his own properties, and you decide what's considered the highest level grade, the middle grade, and the lowest level grade of property. And therefore, in this situation, Rav Nachman says, they each collect, zeh goveh, zeh goveh. Why is that? Because osei baal ziburis, the one who has only the most inferior type of property, grade C property, osei baal ziburis. So in this situation, the one who has only grade C property, the gobi leila beinanis, he's allowed to go and take the beinanis from the other person. The other person had beinanis and ziburius. Now you are allowed to go collect a chov with beinanis. There are rules as to what you collect. We had earlier, there's a Tosas of Rabbeinu Tam that said under what situations you can collect what properties. So the rule is about chov is allowed to go collect from properties that are beinanis. So the person who only has a ziburius property will go and collect from the person that has both the beinanis and ziburius properties, a beinanis. So he goes and takes that from him. The hava gabei idis, because he only has ziburius. So the other person's property, even though it's beninus, is to him considered idis, is considered a better property. And then the other person, Rosahahu, Shoki Ziburis. But the other person can only go and collect Ziburis because he only has Ziburis properties. So in this situation, Zegover the Zegover, Rav Nachman says, one will go collect a beninus property and the other one is collecting a Ziburis property. Why does Rav Sheishes disagree with that? Rav Sheishes says no. Rav Sheishes Amar, there's an objective status of grade A, grade B, and grade C. You don't look at it from the individual's point of view. You look at it from an objective point of view. Rav Sheishes Amar, hafuche matarto lomali. Rav Sheishes says, you wouldn't gain anything over here, even though they have different levels of property, because you look at the absolute objective level of the property. And therefore, kasava b'shel kol adam heishamim, you look at it from an objective point of view, what everybody would say is grade A, grade B, and grade C property. And therefore, sov, ki osi ahu, beninis damshe koshokel. So in this situation, when the first person went and took the beninis property from the other person had beninis and ziburis, so now, when the person who originally had the beninis and ziburis comes to collect from the first person, so he's going to go take beninis damshe koshokel, he'll go take the beninis right back. So in this situation, nothing has changed. And therefore, Rav Sheishes says, hafuchi matar to lomali. The first person, let's say Reuven, took a beninis, and then Shimon took that same beninis back from Reuven. No, what does Rav Nachman say about that? So Rav Nachman says, my chazis diosi baal ziburis bereisha. You're working only if the person who only had ziburis took the beninis property from the other person first. And then the person who had the beninis and ziburis went and took back that same beninis property from the first person. So that only works if you do it in that order. Well, Rav Nachman, my chazis diosi baal ziburis bereisha. Why are you saying that the person who only had ziburis grabbed first? Lacey baal beninis bereisha. Let the beninis guy grab first the ligbe ziburis, and he'll take the ziburis from the other person, and then v'led the ligbe niyalei, and then he'll go take it back from him. Because Rav Nachman holds that you go and are shomin b'shelow hein shomim. He says that you value it on your own. So if there is a person that has a higher quality and a lower quality, so then he is entitled, in fact, to only go and give the lower quality in this situation. So therefore, why are you saying that the order was, as you said, it could just as easily be the order the other way around? So Gemara says, you're right, 100%. Lo tzricho de kodem tave. You're right. Rav Nachman is dealing over here where the person who had the ziburis was first, and he grabbed the beninus of the other person, and therefore, that's why this is not a situation of hafuche matarta. So, lo tzricha de kodem tave, because he grabbed first. Where it says, bottom line is, so, ki osu lebekbei, bahad de hadad de kosu. But you can't say over here that he made the claim first, because they're coming to Basin. So at the Basin, so even though one of them made the claim first, he doesn't collect first, because the other person is counterclaiming at the same time. So, the bottom line is, they're coming at the same time. So how does this help us? There is no change over here. It's going to be hafuche matarta. So how do we understand Rav Nachman? So the Gemara says, Elo lo tzricha, you know what we're talking about. In order to understand this, we're dealing over here with the islay lechad idis ubeinanis. One has a higher quality field, grade A, and a grade B field. The islay lechad ziburis, and the other person only has the grade C level field. And how does this work out? As follows. My sova Rav Nachman holds lishita so bishelo hein shomim. That you look at subjectively what this person himself has. Umar sava and Rav Sheshes holds no bishel kol adam hein shomim. You look at it objectively. So Rav Nachman says you look at it subjectively, and Rav Sheshes says you look at it objectively. And how does that help? According to Rav Sheshes, who says you look at it objectively, if, for example, the person who has only the ziburis, he would go and collect the beninus from the other person. And now, when the other person returns to go and collect from him, he'll go back and take that beninus field. So according to Rav Sheshes, again, this is hafuche matarta. But according to Rav Nachman, we go by what you have, so the person who has the ziburis now goes and collects a beninus field. But that person will come back and only be allowed to go and collect the ziburis field. So therefore, this would not be hafuche matarta, but this would be that one of them would gain a beninus field and the other would only get a ziburis field. So according to this, we understand the machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. Again, we're learning this on a very simplistic level, but we'll go weiter. Tanan, our Mishnah seems to disagree, however, with what Rav Sheshes just said, because our Mishnah said, the Chachamim, in their machlokas with Admon, the Chachamim ze gove ve ze gove. So the Chachamim say that each one can't go and collect their loan. So that works out very well, like Rav Nachman. But it's a kasha, Rav Sheshes says, hafuche matarta. So how do we understand Rav Sheshes? He seems to be going against the Chachamim. So Gemara says, Tirguma Rav Nachman Alibi Rav Sheshes. So Rav Nachman himself gives the answer to Rav Sheshes. Again, we find this throughout Shas, that they're not interested in winning. Rav Nachman, if he would be silent, so he would win, and Rav Sheshes would lose. But he's not interested in winning or losing. He's interested in coming to the right conclusion. So Rav Nachman himself gives the teretz over here for what Rav Sheshes would say. He's saying that we're dealing here that the loans are maybe for the same amount of money, but they're not for an equal term. Kigon shalav v'zeh le'eser v'zeh le'chomesh. So you have one loan that's due in 10 years, that hasn't yet come due. The other loan is in 5 years, that's now due. And they're coming to the base then now, after the 5 years, when one of the loans is due, but the 10-year loan is not yet due. Now, which one is which? Hechidami, what exactly is the case over here that Rav Sheshes is answering and explaining how Rav Nachman would get around going against the Chachamim in our Mishnah? If you're going to tell me, Ilema, that Rishon Liesa, that when Reuven had lent Shimon the money, that was a 10-year loan, and then when Shimon had lent Reuven the money, that was the 5-year loan. So then, if that's the situation, if Ilema Rishon Liesa Visheni Luchamesh, so Yeho Lema Admon, in that situation, would Admon have said that Shimon has a valid taina? Because he says, I would never have lent you money if in fact I owed you money. You should have just taken the money from me. But then it wouldn't make any sense, because if the first loan was a 10-year loan, that loan wasn't due yet. So then it could be that Reuven needed cash. So the loan to Shimon wasn't due yet. So that's why he didn't collect it. It was, let's say, year 6. So there was still 4 more years left, but he needs the cash right now. So he says, look, listen, I'll get the money back from you in year 10, but right now I need cash, so I'm borrowing the same amount of money from you in year 6. So therefore, in that situation, Admon has no taina. The Admon understanding that why would you have lent money from him, if he in fact owed you money, well, it makes perfectly good sense because your loan wasn't due yet. The IOU that you had wasn't due till year 10, and you needed cash in year 6. So, Ilo Yisi Chayib Lecha, Ketzat Halovi Bimeni, wouldn't apply. Halo Motazimne. The time hadn't yet come to collect, so why would Admon say that Reuven's note is a false note? In fact, it's a true note, and it's just not due yet. And that's why Reuven borrowed from Shimon the same amount of money that he had lent Shimon, because this loan, that first loan that Reuven had lent Shimon, isn't due yet, and Reuven needs the cash right now, so that's why he borrowed from Shimon. Halo motos mane. But Elo Rishon Nechomesh, if you say that the first loan that Reuven had lent Shimon was for 5 years, and then Ushen Liesa, and only then that Shimon subsequently lend Reuven money for a 10-year note, so then we understand why Admon would say what he's saying. However, we still have a problem. Hechi Dami, what exactly happened over here? Eid Demotu Zimne, if the loan that Reuven had lent to Shimon was in fact due, so then my time of the Rabbanan. So then the Rabbanan make no sense over here. Zegover, Zegover, Admon is 100% correct. And if the loan wasn't yet due, Halo Motu Zimne, and then my time of the Admon. And then Admon's not correct. So again, we have a problem. If you want to say that the first loan was the 5-year loan and the second loan was the 10-year loan, so then, again, it doesn't make any sense one way or the other, either for Admon or for the Chachamim. If the loan was due, then it doesn't make any sense for the Chachamim to say, Zegover, Zegover. After all, Admon is correct. If the loan wasn't due, then Admon doesn't make any sense and the Chachamim are correct. So what's going on? So Gemara says, no. Lo tzricha. You know what the case is? The Osu B'Hawi Yoma, the Mishlam Chomesh. So that first loan Reuven had lent Shimon was for a 5-year note, and it's due tomorrow. Today is the last day. The Osav Ahu Yoma de Mishlam Chomesh. He's coming on the day that the note is due, but he needs the cash today. Reuven needs the cash today. But Shimon says, loan's not due till tomorrow, so I'm not giving you the cash till tomorrow. So this is where we have the machlokes between Admon and the Chachamim. Mar Sava the Chachamim hold, Ovid Inish de Yosef Liyome. A person says, listen, I need the cash today. I got to get it into the bank by 5 o'clock or else I'll lose my deal. So therefore, he will borrow money, even though he's going to get the money the next day on his note. Nevertheless, he didn't have a choice. While Reuven can collect the note from Shimon from tomorrow, he needs the cash today, so he borrows the money from Shimon today. So that's the opinion of the Chachamim, and therefore, Zegover, Zegover. Each of them will collect when their note is due. However, Admon says, Umar Sava, lo Ovid Inish de Yosef Liyome. Give me a break. The guy is going to borrow money today. When the guy owes him the money tomorrow, he'll figure out a way to manage till tomorrow. And therefore, instead of taking out a loan from Shimon, he'll just go collect the IOU that Shimon owes him tomorrow, and he'll wait till tomorrow. So that's what the machlokas revolves around. That's teretz number one. Teretz number two, to explain the Mishnah, is from Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama Amar, Hocha B'yas Meskinen. You know what we're dealing with over here? It's not that Reuven and Shimon are having their claims, but it's the Yisomim of Reuven that are making the claim against Shimon, or vice versa. It's the Yisomim of Shimon that are making the claim against Reuven. The Yasve Migva Gobi, because Yisomim can go and collect the loans that their father is due from the other person, but Agbuye lo magbinon minayu. But if they don't have any properties, we don't go and collect from the estate, from the Metaltalin. So in this situation, there is an advantage for the Yisomim, and therefore, this is not a case of Zegova. Zegova, in fact, only one side would be able to collect, the other side would not be able to collect. However, the Gemara says, there's a problem with this teretz of Rami Bar Chama. The Mishnah had said, V'ho Zegova, V'Zegovik Tani. It said that each one will collect. According to you, Rami Bar Chama, only the Yisomim collect, the other side doesn't collect. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's what the Mishnah meant. Zegova, it meant that the Yisomim will actually collect, and the other side, while they are v'zeroi legavos, they're capable of theoretically collecting, however, v'enlo, but they can't collect because they're collecting from Yisomim, and the Yisomim didn't have any properties that they inherited, and therefore, they can't collect. But it meant zegova, v'zegova, at least in theory. But Rava doesn't like this. He says, shnei shuvos v'davar. I have two reasons why Rami Bar Chama is not correct. Number one, that's not what Zegova Zegova means. Chodah, the Zegova, Zegova, Ketani, and it's hard to say that it means Zeroi, Ligabos, V'Einlo. So that's reason number one why I don't like Rami Bar Chama's Teretz. Reason number two, V'od, like Binhu, Aro, Liyasme. So we would go say that the Yisomim go collect the land, but then, now the Yisomim have land. V'Lihodar, V'Ligbinu, Minayu. Now, the one who the Yesomim, the estate, owe the money to, can go collect from that property that they now have. So yes, the Yesomim got it, but now he'll take it right back from them. Because this is what Rav Nachman said. Rav Nachman. What did Rav Nachman say? Rav Nachman, Rabba Barabu. We had this previously. Yesomim shegavu karka b'chovas aviyat. Well, the Yesomim may not have inherited karka if their father's estate had an IOU, and the estate then collected karka from somebody else, so Baal Chosev Gover also in the head. Now, if the estate owed somebody, now that person can go collect from the karka that came into the estate, albeit it came into the estate after the death of the father, but the IOU was there beforehand, so therefore, this karka that is now brought into the estate is able to be collected from by people that the estate owed money to. So therefore, the Gemara says, you're right, Kasha, these two points that Rava brought down are Akasha on Rami Bar Chama. But the Gemara says, V'lokmo de'is lehu liyasne ziburis. But we could still possibly give a resurrection to Rami Bar Chama's teretz from the following. Because we could say that the Mishnah is talking about with the Yesomim, the estate that the Yesomim inherited has ziburis karka in it. V'is leh l'didei id is a benenis. But the other person, again, let's assume over here we're dealing with Reuven and Shimon. So Shimon died, and his Yesomim are coming to collect from Reuven, and Reuven is coming to collect from the estate. So in this situation, the estate, the Yesomim, they only have Ziburis. But Reuven, this lay, Lididei, Idis Ubenidis, he has grade A property and grade B property. So the Yesomim, the Ozli Yesome, Govu Beninis, the Yesomim, they can collect the Beninis property from Reuven. And then when Reuven goes to collect from the Yesomim, Umagbu le ziburis, but they can give him the ziburis property that they have, because in this situation, the Yesomim only pay with the inferior, the grade C property. So the Yesomim will gain in this situation, they're getting grade B, but they're giving up only grade C. Alternatively, the Nami, Bishol Kol Adam Hein Shamim. Or we can say that you look at it as the objective status, so the Yesomim can go collect the Beninis from Reuven, but Reuven can only go collect the Ziburis from the Yesomim, because Ha'ein Nifraim and Nichsa Yesomim Elam Ziburis. You can only collect from the Yesomim from the worst property that they have, from the grade C property. But the Gemara says that also isn't right. So this resurrection of Rami Bacham is not correct, because Hani Mili Hechad Lo Tofas. When we said that you're not allowed to go and collect from the Yesomim except from Iziburis, that's assuming that you didn't yet collect from it. Avol Hechad De Tofas, Tofas. But if you already collected it, so then you are allowed to go and retain it, and you don't have to go give it back. In this situation, he didn't grab it literally. He has it in his possession. So the Reuven says, listen, I'm not giving you my Beninis and then taking back from you Ziburis. So it's as if I grabbed already from you the Beninis, and the din is that if I grabbed it from you, I am entitled to keep it. So here it's as if I grabbed it from you. I'm keeping it, what I already have, and therefore Rami Bar Chama's teretz isn't going to work out. As I said, this was a complicated Mishnah, and now we go weiter. Now, we finished the seven statements that Abban had made, so now we're going to discuss a very interesting idea about Eretz Yisrael versus Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael versus the rest of the world. So the Mishnah tells us, Shalosh Arotzos L'Nisuin. There are three categories of land in Eretz Yisrael in regards to Nisuin, in regards to marriage. So what do we mean by regards to marriage? Can you force the wife or the husband to go move to the other area? So within Eretz Yisrael, we divide up Eretz Yisrael into three parts, Yehuda, the Eber HaYarden, VaHaGolo. So you have these three regions, if you wish, in Eretz Yisrael. And the din is, Ein Motziin Me'ir Le'ir, U'mikrach Le'krach. You're not allowed to go and force somebody. He gets married to a woman, and now he says, I want you to go move to my city, or I want you to move to my krach. An ir is small. You have a kfar is like a village, an ir is like a small city, and a krach is like a big metropolis. So a man cannot force his wife to move from where she lives, even though it's a city, into a different region. So if you're living in Yehuda, the husband can't force his wife to move to an equivalent city in Eber HaYarden or Galil, or vice versa. And likewise, Mikrach L'Krach, he can't make her move from a big metropolis in one of these three regions to a big metropolis in another one of the three regions. In other words, the woman is entitled to stay in the same region that she's been used to living in. So if she's from Yehuda, she can only move within Yehuda. If she's from Eber Yadin, she can only move in Eber Yadin. If she's from the Galil, she can only move in the Galil. Of course, if she wishes to, she's allowed to. But he can't force her to go if he tries to and she doesn't want to go. So basically, we'll force him to give her a ksuba. So, ein motzi me'ir le'ir, u'mikrach le'krach, within different arotzos. However, avo ba'oso ha'aretz, within the same region, motzi me'ir le'ir, u'mikrach le'krach, a man can force his wife to move from city A in Yehuda to city B in Yehuda, or to the big metropolis in Yehuda to another big metropolis in Yehuda. Within the same region, a man can force his wife to go and move from one city to another city, me'ir le'ir, and from a metropolis, mikrach le'krach, from a big, large city, a metropolis, from one place to another place. However, that's only within the same region. Avo ba'oso ha'aretz only, motzi me'ir le'ir, mikrach le'krach, and the Mishnah therefore says, and we turn to Kuf Yud Omid Beis, however, avalo me'ir le'krach, lo mikrach le'ir. But even within the same region, you can't force a woman to go from a smaller city to a very large city, or from a very large city to a smaller city. Again, if they wish to, if they agree to it, you can do anything. But we're talking here about forcing somebody to go, and if they refuse, what are the consequences in terms of the kesuba? So basically, the Mishnah is telling us, if you can't force them, so then you would have to give the kesuba. Whereas if you could force them, and they choose not to go, then you would divorce them without having to give the kesuba. Furthermore, the Mishnah says, motzihim minove ha-ra, linove ha-yofe, you can go and force a woman to move from a place that's not so nice, and nove ha-ra is like from a slum, from an area that the house is not so nice, to an area where the house is very, very nice. However, avalomi nove ha-yofe, linove ha-ra, but you can't force her to move from a palace, a palatial type of a house, into a slum, into a dinky dwelling. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama. Rav Shimon Gamliel disagrees. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer, you can't force a woman to move from a more humble type of a place to a fancy, fancy place. Why not? Sounds like it's an upgrade and it should be allowed. So, because living in a high society, living in a fancier place, is not always good for a person. It can make a person actually worse off than they were beforehand. So therefore, even though objectively it sounds like moving from a slum to a palace is a good thing, if the woman doesn't wish to, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, you can't force her to do that. Okay, now we start the Gemara. Makes very good sense. Bishlam mikrach le'ir, we can understand why a person who's living in a big city, you can't force him to move to a smaller city. Mikrach le'ir, for the metropolis into a small town, so we understand why that's not something that you can force her to do, because the mikrach shlichei kol milei. Because she's used to having every shopping available to her. She's used to having everything available in the big metropolis. She never has to go and travel anywhere. It's all right there. Whereas if she moves to this smaller city, okay, they're not going to have a supermarket that's open 7 days a week. They're not going to have all the different clothing stores that she's used to. So therefore, she can say, no, I don't wish to move from the large city to the small city. However, Elamir Lekrach, my timer, but why not move from a small city to a big metropolis? How could that possibly be bad? So Moshe says, yeah, it could be. Messiah Lila of Yossi Bachanina, because this is in accord with what Yossi Bachanina said. What did he say? Damar Yossi Bachanina, Minayin Shi Yeshivas Krachim Kosha. How do we know that sometimes living in a big metropolis can be difficult on a person, and life is much simpler and much calmer and much nicer in the smaller city than in the big metropolis? How do we know that that's true? So very interesting, we're possibly in Nehemiah, where it tells us, Shenemar, Vayivaruchu Om, the people blessed, L'chol Hu'anoshim, the people blessed, all those people that said, okay, we'll go live in Yerushalayim. Implication being that nobody wanted to live in Yerushalayim because that's the big metropolis. And people like living in these small suburbs. People like living in this small area where they have lots of trees and they have lots of grass and they have lots of space, as opposed to living in a crowded big metropolis where there's all sidewalks and there's no trees and there's no free area. So again, we see from Nehemiah that the people blessed those that said, okay, we'll go live in Yerushalayim, implying that living in the big metropolis is not everything that you think it might be, and therefore you can't force a wife to move from a smaller city into the big metropolis. Then we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Rav Shimon Gamliel omer v'chulei. Rav Shimon Gamliel said that you can't force a woman to go from a slum, a simple, humble place, to a palatial type of an estate. Because, he says, mipnei she'hanoveh hayofeh bodek. What does that mean? My bodik, the Gemara says. So this goes in accord with what Shmuel said. What does Shmuel say? The Shmuel, the Amr Shmuel, Shinui Veses, Techilas Cholim Eyayim. When you ever go and change the Veses is literally means a period. A woman has her vessels. But here it's talking about, not specifically the period, but it's talking about any change that you make in a person's routine can lead to stomach problems. That's the beginning, tchila, of chole meyayim. When a person has a routine, so they're very comfortable. As soon as you start stressing them by moving them out of the routine, they start getting ulcers. They start getting irritable bowel. They start getting all sorts of complaints. So therefore, changing around things that a person's used to can lead to trouble. So even Shmuel would say, as Rabbi Shimon Gamliel had said, that moving from a simple, humble type of a house to a big palatial estate, that's not necessarily good for a person. Then we bring down further from Sefer Ben Sira. Sefer Ben Sira is not considered one of the Chav Dalet books of Tanakh, but it is mentioned many, many times in Tanakh. It was originally questioned, should it belong in the Sifrei Tanakh, the Sifrei HaKodesh, but it was rejected. It was written by Ben Sira. Some suggest that he was the son of Yirmiah from an impregnation in an ambacha. An interesting story. In any event, Ben Sira's Sefer is often quoted by Chazal as having very smart things, even if it's not written Beruach HaKodesh, even if it's not one of the 24 books of Tanakh. And it's written in the Sefer Ben Sira, called the Sefer Ben Sira, Kol Yimei Ani Royim, all the days of a poor person are bad. So the Gemara says, what do you mean all of the days? After all, Shabbos and Yom Tov, he gets nice food. We have to make sure that the Ani has the Dalei Kosos for Pesach. We have to make sure that he has meat and chickens for Shabbos. So we have an obligation to make it that it's not so bad for him on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, how can you say, Ben Sira, that all the days of the Ani are bad? Well, Yikos Shabbos is Yom Tovim. We're hopefully providing him with decent meals. So it should be good for him. So, that goes in accordance with what Shmuel just said. Kiddush Shmuel, the Yom HaShmuel. Shinui Veses, Tchilas Chol HaMiyayim. If a person is not used to having caviar, he's not used to having steak, he's not used to having fancy foods, he's used to living off peanut butter and Cheerios, and all of a sudden you give him these fancy foods, it's going to start to give him stomach problems. Rahman al-Islam, we know that the people after the Holocaust, that they came out of the concentration camps and they were given candies and given food, so they all had lots of problems from a GI point of view. Their stomachs weren't capable of ingesting these highly nutritious types of meals after they've been so devastated with starvation by the Nazis. Yimach Shemam Zichram. So that's what Shmuel's telling us over here, that if a person is not used to good stuff and then you give them good stuff, it can actually be bad for the person. Furthermore, it says in the Sefer Ben Sira Omer, Aflelos, it says, Kol Yimei Oni Royim, and also the nights aren't even good for the poor person. Why is that? Because he lives in the lower lands, because he can't afford the higher properties in the higher land. The property prices, the real estate to live in, is better in a higher place. But the fields are better in a lower place. So this poor person has the worst of both worlds. He has, his house is all the way at the bottom, and his fields are all the way at the top. So Bishval Gagim Gago Uvimrom Horim Karmo. His house is all the way at the bottom, and his vineyards are all the way at the top. And therefore, Mimitar Gagim Legago. So when it rains, so the rain flows off the roofs of the people living in the higher areas, and it all lands in his roof and all lands in his floor. So therefore, he has the worst of the living situation because all the rains come down to the bottom. But when you're dealing with the vineyard, so he goes and fertilizes his field, and the rain comes and it flushes all the fertilized dirt from his field down into the other guy's lower fields. So in the vineyards, it's bad to be on the top. In the houses, it's bad to be on the bottom. And he never has the worst of both worlds. Now we talk further in the next Mishnah. Hakol Malin Eretz Yisrael. A man can force his family and his wife to move to Eretz Yisrael. That's the place where we all should be. This is my last day in Eretz Yisrael. I'm dictating this last year in Eretz Yisrael. So very appropriate for me to be learning this, how important it is to try to come back to Eretz Yisrael and to live in Eretz Yisrael as often as one can. So the Mishnah is telling us a man can force his wife, his family, to move with him to Eretz Yisrael. However, man are called Mutzin, but you can't force him to leave Eretz Yisrael. The guy wants to go to Chutz Laaretz. The wife says, nope, I'm staying over here. So she's entitled to a ksuba, as we'll see. In all of these situations, you hopefully can work it all out. Again, these are abstract dinim when there's fights. Of course, if they all agree, you can do whatever you can, albeit one should always try to stay in Eretz Yisrael. But in the situation where you can, so you're allowed to leave if everybody agrees. But if one person doesn't agree, you can't force her to go. And in fact, it's going to lead to a divorce. She's entitled to a ksuba. She's not the reason that she should lose her ksuba. Whereas the other way around, if she doesn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael, for example, so then if she's the reason that she's not going, so then she can be divorced and you don't have to give her a ksuba. Mishnah continues and says, Hakol Malim Yushalayim. The same thing applies in the rest of Eretz Yisrael to Yushalayim. Then I call Motzin. And you can't force somebody to leave Yerushalayim. And this is true, Echad HaNoshim, V'Echad HaNoshim. Either one can force the other. The wife can force the husband can force the wife in those situations where it's allowed to force them. Now, the Mishnah tells us, Nosa Ishod Eretz Yisrael, if you married a woman in Eretz Yisrael, the Girsha of Eretz Yisrael, Rechman Lassan, the end of divorcing him in Eretz Yisrael, so no, see, Lom, Mimol, Eretz Yisrael. So you pay the Ksuba off when you divorce her in Eretz Yisrael currency. However, Nosa Isha of Eretz Yisrael, if you married a woman in Eretz Yisrael, and then Vigirsha of Kaputkia, and you went in Chutz Laaretz, and you divorced her in Kaputkia. Now, Kaputkia is, the coins in Kaputkia are more valuable than the coins in Eretz Yisrael. Rashi tells us that their coins are Gedolos, the Shoklos Yosef, Mishal Eretz Yisrael. So they're heavier, they're bigger, and a shekel in Kaputkia is worth more than a shekel in Eretz Yisrael. So the Ksuba just says she's entitled to a certain number of shkolim, a certain number of zuzim. She's entitled to, let's say, the Mona Messiah. She's entitled to 200 zuz. So the zuzim in Kaputkia are going to be 200 zuz. It's going to be worth more than 200 zuz in Eretz Yisrael. So the Mishnah tells us that she got married in Eretz Yisrael, but they get divorced in Kaputkia. You pay off in Eretz Yisrael funds, the lower level currency. Notzi lo mimos Eretz Yisrael. But the other way around, if you married her in Kaputkia and you divorced her in Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately, the garish of Eretz Yisrael, so then no sin, no mo'os Eretz Yisrael. You give her the lower level coins here. The Gemara is going to discuss this. It doesn't seem to make sense because she's always getting the worst end. One would have thought that you either give it to her where they were married or you give it to her where they divorced. Here she seems to get the worst of both worlds. And the Gemara will explain that's because the din of Ksuba, according to this Tana, is Midrabanan, and therefore Midrabanan, she is only going to get the lesser of the two. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel disagrees. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer, no. No, see, only most Kaputkia. In the last case, where she was married in Kaputkia, so you go by where the Shibut took place in Kaputkia, and even though he divorces her in Eretz Yisrael, he has to give her the Kaputkia coins. That's because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that the Gemara will explain that the Ksuba is the Raisa, and therefore this Shibut took place on a Daraisa level in Kaputkia, so therefore that's the coins that he has to go and pay her. We'll see this more in the Gemara. Finally, the Mishnah says, Nosa Isha b'Kaputkia, v'Gersha b'Kaputkia, so then everybody agrees, Nosa Lo Mimo is Kaputkia. In that situation, even though the Ksuba is the Rabbanan, even according to Chacham say the Ksuba is the Rabbanan, nevertheless, since they got married and divorced in Kaputkia, so of course you pay with the coinage of Kaputkia. You can't say, well, I want to give you the lower coins of Eretz Yisrael in that situation. Now we start the Gemara. Gemara says, Hakol Malin. Anybody can force anybody else in the family to move to Eretz Yisrael. Who does that come to include? Lasu Yemai. Why are you telling me Hakol? Who's that coming to include? So Gemara says, Lasu Yavadim. This comes to include if you have an Eved Ivri with you. So he's living with you. He's a free person. And he's living with you. You can force him to come with you. He's indebted to you for the 6 years servitude. And you can force him to come with you, at least for that period of time, to Eretz Yisrael. But the Gemara says, there is another opinion that says that that was already included in the Mishnah. There is another version of the Mishnah that said it already includes Eved Ivri. So Lasu Yemai. So who does the Hakol come to include? So Gemara says Lasu Ye Minova Hayofel Linova Ra. This comes to include that even if you have a palace in Chutz Laaretz and now you want to move to a more humble type of a dwelling in Eretz Yisrael, you can force them to do that. Okay. Then the Mishnah said Ve'en Hakol Motziin. You can't force someone to leave from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz. Who does that come to include? Lasu Yemai. So that comes to include Lasuye Eved Shabarach Mechutz Laaretz L'Eretz Yisrael Laaretz. You have an Eved Kenani who ran away from his master in Chutz Laaretz and he comes to Eretz Yisrael. And now the master comes to get him back and the guy says, the Eved Kenani says, I'm not leaving Eretz Yisrael. So what do? In that situation, in Damrin and Levi, we tell the master, Zavnei Hocha, go sell this Eved in Eretz Yisrael, Vizil. And then you can go back to Golos if you want. However, the Eved has the right to stay over here. Mishum Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael, because we want more people in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, this Eved will be an asset to Eretz Yisrael. So we're not going to force him to leave. We'll force you to sell him in Eretz Yisrael. And this way, if you want to leave, you can leave. But the Eved gets to stay over here. You're not losing out because you'll sell him here in Eretz Yisrael. Then it said, Hakol Malam Yushalayim. Everybody can go and force everybody else to go up to Yushalayim. Who does that everybody coming to include? Lasu Yemai. So this comes to include Lasu Yeminova Hayofa Lenova Ra. This comes to include you have a nice palace in Haifa and you want to move to a more humble type of a dwelling in Yushalayim. So in this situation, you can force them to leave. Ah, very good. Then it says Ena Kol Mutzim, but you can't force somebody to leave Yushalayim to go to even other places in Eretz Yisrael. Lasu Yemai. Who does that come to include? Why do we say Hakol? Ena Kol Mutzim. So the Gemara says, this comes to include Lasu Yafilu Minova Harua Lenova Yofa. You have a small, humble dwelling in Yushalayim. You can move to a palace in Haifa. No, they don't have to leave in that situation. We already taught this. Baidi the Tana Reisha, Ein Motziin, Tana Sefer Nami, Ein Motziin. And this, while it doesn't give us any Chiddush, but since it taught us the first case in terms of leaving Eretz Yisrael for Chutz Laaretz, so it teaches us to be leaving Yushalayim for the rest of Eretz Yisrael as well. So even though there's no Chiddush over here, we do it for parallelism. Then the Braisa says, Tanu Rabbanan, Hu Amir Lalos, a man wants to go up to Yushalayim, or possibly from Kutzlar to Eretz Yisrael, via Meir Shalolalos, and she doesn't want to go in this situation, Kofin Osolalos. So we force her to go from Kutzlar to Eretz Yisrael, or from Haifa, or other parts of Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim. And if she doesn't want to go, Vim Lav, so Tetzim Lo Ksuba, then it's her fault that the marriage isn't continuing, so the man can divorce her without having to give her a Ksuba. But if it's the other way around, she wants to go up to Eretz Yisrael, she wants to go up to Yerushalayim, he omers lalos, who omers lalos, and the man doesn't want to go, so then Kofin to lalos, so since she wants to go, we force him to go. If he doesn't go, Vim Lav, so then she's entitled to a Ksuba, she's not the source of the divorce, and therefore Yotzi, if he takes Ksuba, he has to go give her her Ksuba. Another situation, he omers lalos, who omers lalos, she wants to go and leave Eretz Yisrael, or leave Yerushalayim, who omers lalos, and he wants to stay. So Kofin osa shalolos, so we force her not to leave. And if she disagrees, she says, listen, I'm leaving, I can't take it here for whatever the reason, be in love. So then, Tetzim Lo Ksuba. He's entitled to give her get without having to pay the Ksuba. It's the other way around, however. Who am I, Lord says? He wants to leave Eretz Yisrael, or he wants to leave Yishalayim. Who am I, Lord says? She says, no, I'm not leaving Eretz Yisrael, I'm not leaving Yishalayim. So then, Kofin Oso, Shalom says, so we force him to stay. If he's saying, I'm going anyway, be in love. So he has to give her a get, Yotzi, Vitin Ksuba. But he has to pay the Ksuba in that situation. And we call it the Mishnah, Nasi Shavachule, who said, if a man married a woman, and they married in Eretz Yisrael, but they divorced in Kaputki, or they got married in Kaputki, and they got divorced in Eretz Yisrael, so then you always pay the Eretz Yisrael funds, so that seems to be contradictory. Hokufakasha, it seems to be internally contradictory. Because Tani, it says, no, so you should marry Yisrael, Begerish, but Kaputki, if they married in Eretz Yisrael, but they got divorced in Kaputki, where the coinage is better, no, so no, so love me most, Eretz Yisrael, he gets to pay the lower currency of Eretz Yisrael. So what do we see? Alma, the law is, it seems, Basar Shibud Dazlin, and you go after where the Shibud occurred, which was they were married in Eretz Yisrael, so the Shibud occurred in Eretz Yisrael, that's why you pay with the coinage of Eretz Yisrael. But then the other way around, Ema Seifa, it doesn't make any sense. Look at the next part of the Mishnah, the Seifa, which said if they got married, Nos Yishav Kaputkia, so the Shibud took place in Kaputkia, where the larger coins are, but nevertheless, if Gerish Eretz Yisrael, the divorce in Eretz Yisrael, Nos Yilam Mos Eretz Yisrael, he gives it the lower value coins of Eretz Yisrael. Amo Basar Guvaina Azlina, you go after where it's collected and not where the Shibud took place. So it seems to be internally contradictory. The Tanakama seems to be saying that sometimes you go after the Shibud and sometimes you go after the place where it's collected from, Basar Guvaina. So Amar Rabba, Rabba says it's not a contradiction because that Tana holds Mikule Ksuba Shanu Kan because Kesavra Ksuba the Rabbanan. This Tana holds that the Ksuba is the Rabbanan, and therefore, since it's in the Rabbanan, the rabbis only set it up, Likula. And that, therefore, the man has the advantage in this situation. He's paying the Ksuba, but he can pay it with a lower currency of either they were married in Kaputkia, so he still can pay with the currency of Eretz Yisrael. They married in Eretz Yisrael, still can pay with the currency of Eretz Yisrael, even though they got divorced in Kaputkia. That explains the Tana Kama. No, Rav Shimon Gamliel disagreed. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer, no, knows him almost mikaputkia because he holds Ksuba Ksuba the rice. He says that the Ksuba is the rice, you go after the Shiba took place. The Shiba took place, that's where you go and pay the funds from. Tana Rabbanu, we learn the following braisa, Motzi Shtach Hova Chaveiro. If a man has an IOU, Reuben has an IOU that Shimon owes him $100, so he has this IOU against his friend. Motzi Shtach Hova Chaveiro, Reuben brings out a Shtach Hova against Shimon, and it says in the Shtach Hova, Kosovo Bavel. It says that this loan occurred in Bavel. So then, Magbeh will be most Bavel. So then you have to pay back with the coinage of Bavel. But if the loan says Kosovo Eretz Yisrael, if the loan was occurred in Eretz Yisrael, so Magbeh will be most Eretz Yisrael, then you have to pay back in the money of Eretz Yisrael. If it didn't specify where the loan took place, Kosovo Stam, it just said that Shimon owes Reuven $100. So then, Hotzio be Bavel, if they took him to court in Bavel, so Mestama, that's where the loan took place. Magbeh Mos Bavel. You pay with the coinage of Bavel. If Hotzi Eretz Yisrael, they took him to court in Eretz Yisrael, so then Mestama, Magbeh Mimos Eretz Yisrael. You have to go pay him with Eretz Yisrael currency. If the loan said Kosovo Kesef Stam, if it just said Stam, so it said silver, Kesef, but it didn't say what type of silver, what currency, so Mashi Yirtza Love Magbeyu. So then the proof is Hamotzi Mechaveiro Olav Araya. So Reuven says it's this type of kesef, and Shimon says it's that type of kesef. So we believe Shimon. Shimon gets the choice over here because Hamotzi Mechaveiro Olav Araya. So Mashi Yirtzalova, whatever Shimon the borrower wishes to go and pay back, he can go pay back as long as it's silver. Mashi Enkei B'Ksuba, as opposed to the Brisa says by Ksuba it's different. What does that mean? By Ksuba it's different. Ahai, what does that mean? So I'm a Rav Sharsha, and Rav Sharsha says it goes back on the Reisha. What does that mean? Lafuki with Rav Shimon Gamliel. It says the Ksuba is different because we don't follow the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel that the Ksuba is the Reisha, the Omer Ksuba is the Reisha, but we follow the opinion of the Chacham, the Ksuba is the Rabbanan, and the woman is always going to be in the worst position. The husband who's paying the Ksuba will be able to pay it in the coinage that he wishes to. Oh, that's what this Masha Enkein Ksuba goes on according to Rav Sharsha. But the Gemara says, Kosovo Kesef Stam, but we just said in this Braisa that if you just wrote silver, but you didn't specify what type of silver, so then Mashi Yitzel over Magbeyu. So then, the lover, the one who borrowed the money, can pay back in any type of silver that he wants to. But the Gemara says, Veima Naska, maybe this meant over here a bar of silver. Naska is like a silver ingot. So therefore, he should have to go pay him back with a silver bar, which is worth more. Why are you saying that he's allowed to go pay him back with the lower quality silver coins? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, because no, it said kesef stam, but it said matbeya kesef, without specifying what type of a matbeya of kesef. I, the Amor Priti, maybe it meant prutos. So the Gemara says, Amar Papa, Priti de Kaspa, law of the Yiddish. No, nobody made silver pennies. Pennies were normally made out of copper, and therefore silver pennies didn't really exist, and therefore there couldn't be possible to say that he should pay him back with silver. But it doesn't mean an inga, it means a coin, and therefore you can pay him back with any type of silver coin, but obviously not pennies. Now this is a good break point over here. The Gemara is going to continue tomorrow talking more about Eretz Yisrael, but we'll stop over here. With this, we conclude today's shiur.